welcome to the Press Start Podcast, Press Start Australia's weekly video game discussion podcast. I'm your host, Ewan, joined today by my fellow gamers and co-hosts, James.
Hello.
Shannon.
Hello.
And Kieran.
Hello.
Today we're going to be talking about Warner Brothers doubling down on their controversial live service strategy, James's review of the Outlast Trials and preview of Dragon's Dogma 2, and the new June Awakening gameplay trailer. But first, let's talk about Toys for Bob leaving Activision. This comes after a round of layoffs last month. Toys for Bob have announced that it's leaving the care of Activision, becoming a fully independent studio. While the studio presumably won't continue to make Spyro and Crash games as it's been doing independently, since it doesn't hold those rights, it has also revealed it's exploring a possible partnership directly with Microsoft. James, coming to you first, I know we've been spoken about Toys for Bob in the past, kind of caught up in the mechanics, I suppose, of things at Activision. Do you think they can stick it out on their own?
Yes, I think they can. I think it's good because they can do their own thing now, presumably. That being said, like, I feel like all they have really ever been before this was like a Skylanders studio, and obviously I think they did one of the Crashes, right?
Yeah, I'm remembering correctly. Crash Team Rumble recently as well, right? That was theirs.
Yeah, yeah. And they did Crash 4, I think. I'm pretty sure. Yeah. So like, I can see, like, at least they can definitely do their own thing now. I find it a bit weird they're like leaving Activision, but then they're probably working with Microsoft again. So like, I feel like they're already kind of there a bit. But yeah, at least, like, as we've said before, like, they don't have to just become this Call of Duty support studio anymore. Like, they can do their own thing. I wouldn't be surprised, maybe I'm jumping ahead here, but I wouldn't be surprised if we saw them do a Banjo in some way. Like, I feel like that's a pretty good fit for them. Microsoft is looking for someone to do something like that. But yeah, like, it's good for them. Sure.
It's interesting, isn't it? Banjo's a good shout, because I think they've done such a good job with Spyro and Crash, and kind of at least kind of like redoing what's been done before, like the remasters, obviously. But I don't feel like they've quite been able to like usher in a new, or like the next generation of Crash. Maybe that's more reflection on Rumble than it is 4. So yeah, I'm curious to like see if they could stick it out and kind of make their own IPs and develop that. But Banjo would be a natural fit, I reckon. Kieran, how do you think Microsoft is going to fare managing all of these studio relationships kind of going forward? Obviously, Activision Blizzard kind of coming in as well. Like, there's a lot of studios that all sit under their wheelhouse now. They seem to be pretty determined to kind of let people do their own thing. But do you think that'll shake out in reality long term?
I mean, I think it's like, I guess it's probably evident in that massive round of layoffs they did have that they're trying to consolidate things as much as they possibly can. Especially with like their leadership restructure with like Sarah Bond and Matt Booty and stuff. I feel like they are trying to manage that differently instead of having all of these disparate studios and kind of trickle down management wise. But I think it definitely would benefit them as well to contract things off to someone like Toys for Bob, who obviously they have a relationship with already, and can kind of let them just do their own thing. I don't know. It feels like the things that Microsoft is like, the more involved they get, the worse the games turn out, or the worse development turns out. So using Banjo as an example, like handing that off to a contract studio and being like, here, just make something, do your own thing, work it the way you want to work it. I feel like that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I'm glad they're not. I guess like we're speculating at this point, but yeah, it'd be good for them to not be opposed to doing that kind of thing. And I kind of do hope that, like, I don't know, there's kind of still subgroupings of like development studios within like the Microsoft umbrella, right? And I kind of like that Bethesda's kind of got like its own lane, for lack of a better term, and kind of applies its own approach to game development. And I hope Xbox continue to kind of just be a guide and like kind of make maybe suggestions rather than kind of coming in and being bullish and making demands. But if they kind of do like open up their IPs to kind of work a bit more collaborative across the thing, that'd be awesome. Like, I mean, I'm getting kind of crazy here now, but what if Machine Games made a Halo game? or, you know, played in that universe. Like, that could be really quite cool. Shannon, as a slight tangent, reports emerged this week that Embracer is looking to sell off Gearbox Software. Do you think Microsoft could be a good home? Would they want to add Gearbox to their family as well?
I feel like Borderlands, Gearbox owns Borderlands, certainly. It's not a 2K thing. Yeah, I feel like Borderlands would fit Microsoft well and Game Pass well. I think we've spoken about it in recent times that sort of Borderlands does feel to be on a downward trend. So, yeah, maybe it does fit Microsoft in terms of, yeah, I don't know. Yes, at their peak, I think that would be a good acquisition. And obviously there's a lot of talent there, and Borderlands is like a big IP. But yeah, with how many studios and IPs they have to work with, I don't really know if it's an investment I would be making at this point in sort of Gearbox's life.
Mm.
But I don't know. I feel like Microsoft should be happy with what they have now and sort of just look at their output over the next 5 years. I don't think they need to keep adding studios because, A, they've just gone through redundancy, so that'll be an awful look. And B, I think what they've got in Activision and the rest of their IPs is enough for them to sort of look after and nurture for the next decade or so.
Yeah, I think like the position that Embracer is in as well, they do need to kind of keep some top quality studios in-house. They can't, I don't know, suddenly just like hemorrhage in an effort to kind of recoup some of the finances. And I think like in Microsoft's position, surely you'd be looking at your roster and going, okay, we've got enough studios now. Like, we have the teams capable of producing the kind of games that we want to be releasing. It's just a matter of like that coming to fruition.
In saying that, like, Borderlands is huge and there's not that many IPs of that caliber. So I think they'd be looking into it at the very least if they are up for sale.
James, have you got any thoughts on... Will they be allowed?
Is it like an open market for them now? Like, can anything be disallowed after what they've just done with Bethesda and Activision Blizzard? I don't know.
True. Maybe more scrutiny is applied in any future acquisitions. I feel like Activision Blizzard felt like a really big thing. But yeah, I guess fresh scrutiny could always be applied. James, did you have any thoughts on Gearbox?
No.
All right, let me quiz you.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, you did.
Yeah. Well, maybe I do. No, I don't know. I feel like Gearbox did something. Gearbox have worked on Halo before. So, like, I mean, Gearbox would be, like, a good fit to kind of... I know that we've just said it's good that Toys for Bob isn't a support studio for COD, but, like, I feel like Gearbox could be a good support studio for Halo. That would be, like, a good fit. But, yeah, that's my only final thought.
Let's face it, Gearbox Halo is, like, needs the support right now.
anymore, so, yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
All right, let's talk about Warner Bros. Doubling down on their free-to-play and live service game strategy. Speaking recently at a conference, Warner Brothers Discovery's president of streaming and games, J.B. Perrette, looks French, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, affirmed that they are, quote, expanding into the mobile and multi-platform free-to-play space, which could give us much better and more consistent revenue. He pointed to Hogwarts Legacy driving great revenue 1 year and then Suicide Squad kind of hurting them the next. Shannon, what case do you think there is to be made for live service games being there to kind of drive more consistent revenue?
It's a hard one. Like, I think if you were from the outside looking in and looking at the total landscape of live service games with, like, Fortnite, I don't know what else comes to mind, but I'm sure there's a handful of other games making billions of dollars. Like, I think you would be wanting to double down on that, like, if you didn't know a lot about games and what people actually wanted. But I think, yeah, I saw James tweet today about, like, Hogwarts being the biggest game of the year. I think it was even bigger than COD potentially, which is huge, right? Like, that's as we've spoken about, I feel like every episode, like, game sales feel like they're down, but obviously Hogwarts was popular for whatever reason. I can't even remember your question, but yeah, I feel like, again, they're looking back at what sort of the market wanted 5 years ago and maybe during COVID, And then you look at Suicide Squad, and I don't know how you could come away with the feeling that do more of this. Granted, I don't know, Suicide Squad felt like it was doomed to fail from day one, right? Like, they still can't, like, and then you look at Helldivers, which is a huge success beyond belief. So I don't think it's that they shouldn't be looking at games as a service at all, but I don't know how you can ignore how well, like, your own game did and how well they have done in the past with Rocksteady's output, the Middle-earth games. Like, yeah, they had a huge game, huge roster of these single-player AAA games, and it feels like they've gone completely the other direction. And I don't know how you can double down on that after the last 12 months.
I do kind of get it to, like, an extent, because the budgets required to produce our AAA games are just going up and up, and you and the kind of cycle that it takes to produce them as well is stretching out. So you kind of, you know, have a game in development for maybe 4, 5, 6 years before it kind of comes out. And if it then doesn't live up to expectations, it comes a huge hit to your bottom line. So I kind of understand, like, just looking at the numbers of things and the kind of return that, yeah, something like GTA Online, like Fortnite, like Roblox, that kind of has just this longevity to it and this kind of constant drip feed of revenue as being beneficial, but it you need to kind of be able to make that work. I think, like, Helldivers is an interesting example because they just had a really strong core gameplay loop, and they didn't charge, like, a full sort of price to it. They've got a roadmap kind of there. Like, I think a lot of things works in that favor, where, yeah, Suicide Squad just wasn't at all what people wanted. Yeah, there's something to be said for, like, a Spider-Man 2 coming out and setting the world on fire, or Hogwarts Legacy. And it's crazy that they've got that example in their wheelhouse, and yet they don't.
Multiverses as well, like, kind of really launched well and then sort of died out of nowhere, and now that's coming back. But that's another one where, yeah, it just doesn't seem to be working out for them, for these huge franchises.
Yeah, it seems that for every live service game you have that's a success, there's, like, 20 that are long forgotten.
But yeah, the next one could be a hit, though, and then, like, you run to a hit, and your business will boom. So it's a tough one.
It is. James, how do you feel IP should be sort of, sorry, Warner Brothers should be managing their IPs going forward? Does this strategy sit well with you?
Just better. Just manage them better, is my only opinion. I don't know. Like, obviously, my big thing in this is, like, Mortal Kombat. And I do feel like the Warner Brothers, like, big greedy hand is already being felt in Mortal Kombat with, like, the price of the microtransactions and stuff. But yeah, like, I don't know. Like, I feel like fighting games, especially, like, they are live service games in a way already. You know, you've got characters coming out every 2 months. Microtransactions, like seasons, all that jazz. Like, they're already kind of there, and they're quite successful in that way. But I think, like, they just, I don't understand how, as I tweeted, like, you look at, say, Hogwarts Legacy did so well, like, let's turn that into what we tried to do with Suicide Squad as an example. Like, I don't see how you take that message from like the success and the not success of, you know, Hogwarts and Suicide Squad, respectively. But yeah, like, I don't know. I think that they should, like Shannon was saying, like, they used to have so many good, really solid single-player IP. They just need to, like, really commit to that and make really good games people want to buy.
In saying that, I'm sure they're also doubling down on Hogwarts and making, like, 5 other Wizarding World games. Like, I'm sure they are, but
that also is because there was a significant gap in the market for that game, for that brand, right? Like, you know, it is still a very popular brand worldwide, especially, like, in Japan and America. So, like, I feel like that also is why it was so... It might be the Crash Bandicoot kind of thing where, you know, it was such an absence for so long, and then they do another one, and it might not do as well. So maybe that's why they're weary too. But yeah, like, I don't know. I don't know, like, I think as well, like with Multiverses and Helldivers and all that kind of jazz, like, it's still, like, especially with Helldivers, we don't know how it's looking, long term, right? Like, it's only been a month. Mm. Like, that's not that long. Multiverse has also had, like, an amazing launch. Like, everyone was playing it. It was free. There was, like, no barrier to entry. And that still somehow faltered. But I think that was more down to the content strategy, which is also how I feel like Suicide Squad will go, except the launch was shit. The content strategy seems kind of shit. Like, it, I don't think there's any coming back, like, for Suicide Squad.
I suppose you're right, though. Like, they can make a comeback. They can either, like, fall away, or they can make a comeback. Like, I think, you know, Destiny had tons of interest in it initially, and then it kind of faded off.
I mean,
and
I always...
really kind of resurged back.
I always say, look at, like, Rainbow Six Siege. Like, that was, like, a pretty... very average launch. Like, I feel like it was terrible. Like, I don't think any... I didn't think they would ever recover from that. And that is still going. Like, how many years on?
Well, they talk about that game living forever now.
It's it's totally possible. Like, that's lasted two gens almost. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I just don't want Mortal Kombat to suffer. That's my selfish that's my selfish want. Like, I just want NetherRealm to maybe leave WB and, I don't know, get bought by Microsoft or something. Maybe not Microsoft, but yeah, like, anyone.
As much as I think it's an uphill battle to do, like, a live service game right or well, I'm not kind of, like, ready to abandon all hope for them. Because there's still, like, the occasional live service game. I mentioned Helldivers 2. Let's see how that sticks around. But there's still the occasional game like that I enjoy. Like, Rocket League, I'm on the record for having played just stupid amount of hours of that. Apex Legends, I played for donkeys, that kind of thing. So I do have I don't know if affinity is right the word, but I'm not inherently opposed to live service games. And I think there is actually a world in which Suicide Squad comes out and it's a good game, and maybe it'll get back to there one day. But like Avengers as well, like, I feel like there's a world in which that could have been a really good game too. I think that had a stronger single player kind of game first, but maybe that's like all it would have taken. Suicide Squad just kind of like being a proper like rock steady first player game, and then reason to keep playing it thereafter, and they could expand on it from there. And like, I mean, going back to Hogwarts Legacy, I feel like that game could be made even better by, like, you know, they add Quidditch to it, and suddenly there's like a whole kind of FIFA but Quidditch system in it. Yeah,
that's like already happening though, I guess, as a separate thing, right?
Yeah, and I'm sure like this is just an affirmation of that as well, right? But yeah,
I think I kind of
get the strategy. I just think it needs to be more of a balance. Like, it's a bit of a juggling act.
I just think also word of mouth is really important too. You know, that's why I don't really see Suicide Squad coming back, like bouncing back at all. Like, I feel like with Helldivers, like, there's a lot of goodwill there, and like they've, you know, it's not loaded with microtransactions. It's cheap to get in to that ecosystem and stuff. Suicide Squad.
Like, don't put Rocksteady, who's like made one of the best games of like last gen multiple times, and like have them working on this for 7 years as well. Like, I think if Suicide Squad was coming from like anyone else from Rocksteady, it would have just been received totally differently. But like, knowing that's what we got after that long, after the Arkham games, like, just nobody wants that from that studio.
I think that did highlight the issue, like, that made it kind of more pronounced, but I still feel like no matter who made that game, cutting from like what would have otherwise been a climactic sequence into like an escort mission, like, it's just bad game design regardless.
But it's the fact that like that's what we got from them. Like, now there's going to be nothing for like 5 years. It's more Suicide Squad, evidently.
And then how long do you try and like dig it out of the hole that it's in before you cut your losses? We've spoken around it, but Suicide Squad's first free season has been confirmed for March 28th, so it's like the end of this month, not too far away. Adding the Elseworld variant of the Joker, given what happened to the character previously. Kieran, will you be going back to Suicide Squad? Did you play any of it in the first place? I thought I remembered you playing a bit.
I put some time into it.
Yeah.
Maybe like half or like 75% of the way through the core campaign.
Okay.
And then I decided I wasn't having fun anymore. So I probably won't go back to it. Yeah.
It doesn't change when you get to the end game, trust me.
Yeah. From what I hear, I'm good where I am.
Out of curiosity, I want to see how the Joker plays, like, compared to the other characters.
And it's more content, right? It's not just you play through the same...
There's like new environments and stuff, apparently. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah. Mm. I'm far more excited about exosuits coming to Helldivers. Exosuits and vehicles? Like, yeah. Hell yeah.
That's, I just think, like, I kind of hope that there's some kind of game that will come out that will maybe make them change their mind. But then I look at their slate and it's literally like... Multiverses, Harry Potter, and Wonder Woman. And I just don't see any of those games.
Oh, the Wonder Woman game. Yes, like, I forgot about that.
Blowing anything up. But Wonder
DC's
Woman...
DC's always in a weird spot as well, I feel.
Are they?
I mean, their movies are a mess.
I think so.
But that's all over now, thankfully.
Was Middle-Earth, like, their game? Like, was that under their...
Yeah.
Yeah, was it? I'm just trying to... I think it was.
WB,
I feel
I'd like to see them do like, at least with the Nemesis system that they patented. That'd be nice.
Which is like what Wonder Woman is. It's like the next Nemesis system game. And that feels like a mismatch, but at least it's like a single player studio making a single player game, you know?
Yeah.
But then.
Do we know that for sure?
Who knows? Now it's probably Wonder Woman season one. And it's like. You have to earn your gauntlets. Through battle passes and shit. And buy extra whips.
There's 60 Amazonians running around a big map.
Yeah, just hitting each other. It's just like big woman Olympics. Like, I don't know. I'm sure it's a single player game. But yeah, Monolith does good work, so I have faith there. But if the number one game of 2023 that beat COD didn't convince Warner Brothers that maybe that's the way to go, then I don't know if Wonder Woman will.
I really would like to see WB kind of approaching their IPs in the similar sort of way that Marvel has, or Disney, I guess, like more broadly. Just like, you know, we've got these worlds, like, do you come pitch your ideas? Like, we want to hear them. Maybe then they would discover some ideas that aren't just mediocre live service games. We haven't really touched on the mobile aspect of this as well, but like it is, presumably that is still a lucrative world. I don't play mobile games, but I imagine things like Candy Crush and stuff are like still popping off and making billions. Is that right?
Yeah, for sure.
I think so.
Well, maybe we'll get some sort of Suicide Squad match three game. Is she splashing the cash in the games as well?
No, I don't think she does. She's she doesn't like when you have to buy things in games. So when she was very disappointed when she downloaded Plants vs. Zombies 3 a few weeks ago. She was like, you just have to buy everything. I'm like, Mum, have I got a story for you? Like, but yeah.
Welcome to my world.
Bring back fear. Like, that's a Warner Brothers property. Like, make Hell that yeah. happen. Everyone loves horror now. More than they used to, you know? Like, yeah. I don't know.
Well, speaking of horror games that you love, James, I'm curious, did you love the Outlast Trials? You put your review out for it in the past week. How did you find it?
I did. I mainly did. Yeah.
You mainly loved it.
We'll just move on.
Six out of 10.
Yeah. No. I gave it, I think, 7.5 or 8. Let me double check.
Okay.
Feels like it's been 2 years, even though it's been like a week.
How does that compare to like your past experiences with Outlast? Because I feel like you've liked them historically.
Yeah, so I really liked Outlast. Outlast 1, I think Outlast was my first review for the site. Isn't that exciting?
Wow.
Yeah, very special.
Maybe
game.
That'll come back up in What the Wiki.
Reached out to Shannon. Was like, hey, what's up? And then he was like, nothing new. Anyway. Yeah, so, like, I liked the first one, and then I kind of was a little bit... I also liked the second one. I think a lot of people didn't, though. They thought it went a little bit too far, but I kind of like that.
Yeah.
I like that they don't want to, like, shy away from grossness. But I did admit that, like, the formula was getting a little bit stale now, like, because a lot of indie games especially... I mean, I know Outlast is kind of technically indie, but a lot of other horror games kind of copied that, where you're just running away from something and that's it. Like, that's the only formula.
Yeah.
So even though this doesn't like revolutionize that formula, I think adding other people to it, like multiplayer, is like a really cool twist. Because I don't think there's enough. I know there's like is Phantasmagoria or something. Even to like a lesser extent, Lethal Company. But I feel like this feels it feels like, you know, you're all in a game of like Saw together. Like, you've got these little like weird trials to complete, and that can be really fun and really tense. Yeah, so you can play with up to four people, and the idea is like it just chucks you into a trial, which is like a set of objectives, but they're all like kind of fucked up objectives. Like, there's one where you've got to turn a guy into like a sex doll for some reason, in like a sex toy factory. Like, it's really like Outlast is edgy. Like, it's always been edgy, but this is like edgiest it's ever. Yeah, absolutely. as I said in my tweet, full of dicks as well. So if that's your jam.
Double sold.
Yeah, literally. but yeah, like, so, like, one of them has you, you, like, you have to kind of, I think the idea, the story behind it is that you're kind of killing these people who have, what's the word? Like, confronted the corporation behind it. Like, you're kind of killing the detractors of the company, because it's set during the Cold War and stuff too. so yeah, like, there's one where you've got to go into a courthouse, kill the people who, are like witnesses and stuff. Like, it's a really cool setup. And the multiplayer aspect is really cool because, like, you might be playing and the game kind of plays tricks on you. Like, it might, if you guys split up, it'll chuck in like an NPC that looks like one of your other teammates, and they'll kind of follow you for a little bit and then like turn on you. And then you realize that it's not actually them. So, like, it's kind of this incentive to kind of stay together. And you can tell when those things are happening, because it'll be, like, a slightly misspelt game attack or something. So, like, but in the heat of it, you don't really think about it until they, like, turn on you. And then, like, other little things. Like, there's one bit where you all get little... Like, one of you gets, like a scanner that lets you track down these targets with, like, microwaves planted into their head. And the other people have the actual microwave. So one of you's got to try and find this person in this dark room while the other of you have the detonators that will, like, blow the person up. Like, it's really, really... It's really, like, gross, but fun. Yeah, I really like it. My only thing that I didn't like was that I feel like... We've just talked about, like, games as a service. Like, they could definitely expand this if they wanted to. I don't know if they will or not, but it does feel a little bit light on content. And I think it's about $50 or $60.
Was this early access, or was it just PC only?
For it ages? Was early access for like a year, so yeah, you could definitely play it for a year already. But yeah, I really recommend it if you like a horror, like if you want to play a horror experience with your friends that's actually made to be played with friends. Like, I think that's a really good option.
Is that a Ewan shot? Ewan?
Yeah, it is. I just
might, like, have to. Actually, does sound like my cup of tea. Is it, like, so there is a story, like, you play through it start to finish, or is it kind of, like,
nah, it's, more... there's, like, an underlying, like, story in terms of, like, the lore and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's not like the first two Outlasts in that it's not like you start from A and go all the way through it. Like, you okay. literally have, like a hub area. You can decorate your room with, like, weird shit if you want. but then, like, you all go into this, like, shuttle and get taken to a trial, and then you actually play it all together. So, yeah, it's very much like, I don't know if you guys have seen the Saw movies, but it is very Saw-like. Yeah. Even there's one where you've got to, both of you have to, like, jump on either end of, like, a saw and kind of saw someone in half to save yourself. But it's, like, a slow saw, and things are chasing you while you're doing that, and you've got to, like, work together to go, like, back, forward on the saw. And that gets pretty funny, not funny, but, like, intense while, like, all this shit is going down, you know?
Sounds stressful.
It is stressful, but it's fun. But, like, I mean, yeah. I mean, yeah. There's no situation in the real world where I'll ever do any of that stuff, so it's nice to live in a video game, I guess.
I don't know.
I'm glad. Not. I feel like I might need to phone someone if that were the case.
I think, if you like the Outlast games and you've got people to play it with, absolutely. I think solo, it's not the best. I wouldn't recommend it. Like, I feel like it's quite whatever, solo. And they always try and say, no, it's fun for everyone, but, like, it's not a solo experience, I don't feel.
Yeah. Sounds like if it's an experience you can stomach, there is fun to be had with friends. Gross, but fun, as you put it, which I think is just a great box quote. speaking of new games, a trailer came out for June Awakening, which isn't out yet, I should note, but is upcoming. And it's an upcoming open-world survival MMO based on the franchise currently lighting up the global box office, as we're probably all aware. The two-minute trailer shows off a look at the Unreal Engine 5-powered world, as well as short clips of exploration, traversal, combat, and crafting. Straight off the bat, this looks like my cup of tea, big time. But Kieran, how did you rate the trailer?
Yeah, it looks cool. I feel like if I hadn't recently watched like both Dune movies, I probably wouldn't have been as enthused like looking at this, because sure. I don't normally get into those open world survival games. But I think like the fact that it's coming from the same people that did Conan Exiles, and I know people really like that game and it's pretty highly regarded in that space, coupled with like the way that they're working with like the film company and crew and stuff on like getting the authenticity right and like sort of matching that as well as the like the novels and everything, I feel like there's a good formula there. It's a cool world too. It's a cool property that's got a lot of cool stuff to explore. So yeah, no, I'm keen to see how it pans out.
Shannon, do you continue to be impressed by the look of Unreal Engine 5?
Yeah, it looks really nice. I do find that, like, I don't know, Unreal Engine 5 games tend to have a look. I feel like I've seen people say that before. Like, they all, you can immediately tell that, like, it is an Unreal Engine 5 game, and not just because it looks good. Like, it has, I don't know, it's like a Fortnite-y kind of look, which it's not a bad thing. It's just, I don't know, it has a distinct visual quality. But yeah, it looks great. I don't know anything about Dune. I haven't seen the movies, but just visually, the world, it looks stunning.
I haven't seen the second yet. I'm dead keen to see it. It's very good. I think it is like, yeah, a really cool world to adapt into games. And I'm glad, to your point, Kieran, that they're kind of like working with the filmmakers and kind of keeping the look and feel of like what they've got going with this current iteration. And yeah, I'm a sucker for survival MMOs. I'm like curious to see, I guess, like what the objectives of the game kind of end up being, and like what kind of doing missions or like exploring the story and stuff kind of eventuates to be. But yeah, like seeing the glimpses of the base building and traversal and stuff, like I can see myself sinking a ton of time into this.
Can if you it's grow kind your own
what
garden?
I imagine it to be. Can you grow? Well, you know what's funny? When you're talking about the look and feel of these games kind of being consistent, I got like such Jedi vibes looking at this from like Jedi Survivor. I'm like, do all the rocks in deserts in video games look the same? Is that a thing? Like, is every desert rock in video games just the
How
same?
How many ways can you do of, a like, rock?
Weirdly I think when you make a game, you just get that mass. Rock pack and just use that.
Yeah. Unreal Engine 5 rock pack.
Literally, though. But yeah.
What's your feelings on the trailer, James?
Like, it looks fine. I'm just, like, sick of sand in game. Like, there's just there's so much sand.
It's cold, like, and it's coarse, and it gets everywhere.
I'm not even trying to be a Star Wars person. But like, I'm genuinely, like, I feel like Jedi Survivor, there was just too much sand and sand lens coming out. And then there's this, like, it's just making me thirsty. Like, I just feel so dehydrated looking at all these sand games. Like, but yeah, I think
waste you up.
I've read the Dune books, and I used to play the old Dune game. There was one that was like really old, I think 1998 vibes, and that was cool. But it was like obviously not that good. But I haven't seen the new movies at all. I'm actually seeing them this weekend. But nice. yeah. So I think maybe if I see that, I'll be maybe a little bit more invested in all of this. But yeah, it's I feel like Dune was like so. Like unadaptable at some point. Like I feel like it was just always flopping all the time, and now it seems to having this big resurgence and it's doing really well. So
yeah.
Wasn't
Zack Snyder making some sort of like MMO or
Abrams
or something like that?
What? Really?
I feel like Snyder was doing something with Rebel Moon, but I don't know. Yeah, because like,
I think he's trying to make
hard.
Rebel Moon like his new Star Wars. But yeah, it's like you know,
it's not going to happen.
Everyone knows how that's going. Like.
Yeah, that's probably a game that will kind of never come to exist, particularly if this kind of thing is good, I reckon. James, I wanted to come back your way, actually, because there was a preview I wanted to ask you about as well, and that was Dragon's Dogma 2. I believe you got to go hands-off with it. How did you find the look of the game?
Yeah, I got to watch some of it. It was interesting.
I preferred means of previewing a game.
Yeah, it's hard because like it's one of those games where you just kind of want to just immerse yourself in it. But yeah, like it looks good. I don't know. There's not really much more I can say about it in terms of like just watching a video, but it does look good. It looks like a lot of the things because I think I don't know if anyone was aware, but like the original Dragon's Dogma, I think they've been pretty clear that they only really got to do about 25% of what they wanted to do. Like, time and budget got in the way. So it's kind of exciting that this is what Itsuno, the director, kind of wanted to do the whole time. I think that's a really exciting prospect. I know maybe Ewan won't agree with me, but like in terms of open worlds, I think Elden Ring really kind of set the standard for, you know, proper Elden, like discovery and exploration, and like it just felt like something different. And Dragon's Dogma was always quite similar to that too, like in that it would kind of, it put you in this big world, you kind of just make your own fun in a lot of ways. There is a story to follow and there's amazing beasts to like battle and stuff, and the combat is amazing. But yeah, like, I think that they're really kind of doubling down on everything that made Dragon's Dogma so unique as an open world experience, and that's kind of exciting to see with, you know, RE Engine and Capcom now, especially because back then Capcom wasn't, it was kind of in a rut, but now they're like obviously much better. So yeah, like the combat looks fun, lots of cool magic, lots of amazing like weapons and stuff that you can use in fast paced combat, and a big giant griffin to fight. So yeah, the big thing that in that I got from the footage that I watched as well, but it's probably not as, it's very like whatever, is that the quests actually have choices now. Like they, you know, before in the old game it was just like go find this item, come back, and that's it, the quest is done. But now in this there's clear like, you know, morality choices to make. Like in the footage that I watched, this guy asks you to get a book for him so he can keep doing magic to make his life better, but then his family approaches you as you're leaving that room and they're like, can you not get the book please, because like he's obsessed with it and it's actually ruining our life. Like, so you would have that, you know, that kind of dilemma to decide on. I don't know if that will have obviously far-reaching consequences. I don't think it will, but it's just cool little like choices that you have to make rather than just doing quests just to tick off a list. So yeah, I really encourage people
like that kind of thing.
Yeah, who like, I mean, because the first one was kind of based on like Sicily, like it was very like the area was like, you know, this kind of meant to be this like medieval Italy kind of vibe. I don't know if that's still the vibe here because the map is meant to be four times bigger and it's a different world. But yeah, like it's just one of those games where, similar to Zelda in a little bit as well, like you kind of, it doesn't really hold your hand the whole way. Like you do just explore and discover all this kind of cool shit. And there's lots of cool shit that they're not scared for you to miss, if that makes sense.
Right.
Like they've already been pretty clear that like the Sphinx is in the game, but it's quite hard to find it. And it's quite a cool thing for the people who do. But people might play that whole game for, you know, 50 to 80 hours or whatever and never see it. So yeah, it's exciting.
That, again, sounds like quite a lot like Elden Ring as well then, I suppose, with that kind of discovery element. Is the combat Zelda similar as well? Forgive me, I'm not really familiar with Dragon's
Dogma. No, that's okay. Dragon's Dogma is like, it's definitely more play. I would say it's more, I don't want to say playable, but it's more approachable than Elden Ring. It doesn't have that kind of like FromSoft jank to it, I don't feel anyway. And like it's got this cool like little system where, you know, you might start off with like as an archer and then you can might like branch off and become a mage, but then later you can merge them and become like a mage that shoots magic arrows. You know what I mean? Like you can kind of like mix and match your jobs and skills and stuff to create your own kind of sets. But yeah, it's I don't know how to explain it, but yeah, it is like it's an action RPG for sure. It is much easier to play, to pick up and play than say a FromSoft game. But yeah, I really hope it does well because the first one was super underrated, like so underrated for how good it was. And it's cool that Capcom has given Itsuno a chance to like kind of do what he always wanted to do since DMC was so successful. So yeah.
And the companions you have, they're all just like AI companions, aren't they?
So they're called pawns. So the way that it works, it's a thing like it's also one of the unique things about Dragon's Dogma is like it doesn't really have. I mean, I wish it did have co-op. That is something I kind of wish, but it doesn't. So what happens is like you have a pawn. Every character, like when you play the game, you have a pawn, right? You can create your own, and they're like your permanent buddy in a way, and you can kind of make them to complement your style or like, you know, whatever. But then if I were to play the game, say you and after you've played it, I could actually recruit your pawn into my party, and then like I can just kind of play with like your character as well in my party. So, and that you've customized how they behave and stuff already, and that just kind of carries over into my game. But there's other like kind
more advanced summon, essentially.
Yeah, in a way. And you can have up to 3 pawns with you. And they're called pawns because they're like mindless humans without will. Like, that's the story. There's a story reason to it as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, so there are also like pre-created pawns in the world. Like, you can recruit anyone and anyone, I think, into your party and stuff. And they will all have different abilities and specialties and stuff. So yeah, if you're going to like a mission that involves, I don't know, let's just say like a Gorgon or something, like you would take, say, a Gorgon expert with you, and they might fight better against them, or they might explore better if they're an expert in the area and stuff. So you can kind of like mix and match your party and drop people in and out as much as you want. Yeah.
Neat. Okay. One for me to keep my radar, I think. I'm curious. Cool. I do have a rapid fire question for you all. I want to go back to the Suicide Squad question. We've obviously got the Joker coming in the not too distant future. Which character would you like added as a playable character thereafter? Shannon, have you got any on your wish list?
The 8 from Ape Escape. No. I don't know comics at all, but Mr. Freeze, that'd be something that happens. With Arnold Schwarzenegger as the Mr. Freeze in game exclusively.
I want Uma Thurman and Poison Ivy then as well.
Yeah, yes, yeah. Exactly.
Just the Batman and Robin pack.
Was. Like, I can't remember who it was, but...
George Clooney Batman. Catwoman would be a cool addition to the game. Like, kind of the traversal being like all kind of flippy, aerobatic sort of stuff. I'd be about that. Kieran, you got a pick?
I feel like Peacemaker...
Oh yeah,
would be. I mean, they're already putting him in Mortal Kombat, and like John Cena's kind of embodied that character really well, and would fit the vibe. Or Bugs Bunny.
I was not expecting that. Peacemaker's a good shout. I'm with you there. All right, now it's time for What the Wiki, the Press Start Podcast Game Show with the previous week's winner. Okay, What? What did I miss?
Just fuck James, I guess.
Miss James.
No, James said Poison Ivy.
Oh, no, did I? True. Oh, no, yeah. I was actually going to say Scorpion from Mortal Kombat.
Oh, okay.
I could see them doing that.
I was kind of thinking there probably had to be DC characters, but
no, maybe. There's DC characters in my Mortal Kombat. Why can't there be Mortal Kombat in DC?
Very fair. All right, now is time for What the Wiki, the Press Start Podcast Game Show, where the previous week's winner reads part of a Wikipedia page for an unknown game, and we, the contestants, must guess the game. A point is awarded for each correct guess, with a round concluding after someone's bagged themselves 2 points. Last week, that was miraculously me. James is still in the lead, though. He's on 10 points. Brody is on 6. Myself and Shannon are tied in third place on 5 points. Kieran is on 3, and Harry bringing up the rear with nil pois. But yeah, I've got the games all prepped. So contestants, if you're ready, I'll get underway. Please. I see some nods. Good. All right. The game is an action role-playing survival game played from a top-down view. In addition to solo play, players can also form a tribe of 10 players and play cooperatively. In the game, players assume control of an Einherjar, a Viking hero who must protect the seed of Yggdrasil from enemies such as Hellthings. Kieran?
I can't... Fuck it. I know, like, half of the title, I think. Is it Tribes of Asgard? No.
That's it's not Tribes of Asgard.
That's not the title. No.
Shannon. I don't know. Tribes of Midgard.
It is Tribes of Midgard. Damn it. Well done, Shannon. You just amazing. Dug that out of the recesses of your brain somewhere.
Yeah, I was like half joking, but also half it rang a bell.
That's most of my guesses, to be fair. Nice. You've climbed up into second place with that point. Game number 2.
Damn it.
The game is set in a high fantasy setting, split into the realms of Earth, Water, Air, where players take the role of one of the last exalted Knights Order to prevent a major apocalyptic event. The player has 5 weapon classes to select from. Shannon, really? Okay.
I was going to say God of War Ragnarok, but sticking with the theme.
No. The player has 5 weapon classes to select from based on which of their armor sets or valor plates they equip.
Kieran. I'm just going to throw out Godfall.
It is Godfall.
Yes.
Well done, Kieran. Has anyone clued into the theme yet?
Shit games. No.
Yeah, Tribes of Midgard was good.
No, actually, yeah,
How dare you?
Sorry. Very memorable for me.
Yeah. Game number 3. Played from a first-person perspective, the game combines role-playing, survival, and light roguelike elements. Taking place within the retro-futuristic version of the mid-1960s, following an alternative version of World War II, players take control over one of 3 characters, each whom seek to complete a personal task while escaping the fictional city of Wellington Wells.
James.
A crumbling... James.
We Happy Few.
We Happy Few is correct. I thought you might pass on that.
Mm.
All right, we get into the tiebreaker.
Huge. Right.
I don't know if you guys are going to know this game. This is a kind of a Ewan game, but let's find out.
Rocket League.
Players control a survivor who is stranded on an alien planet. To survive, they navigate through the various environments, killing monsters and looting chests to collect items that boost their offensive and defensive capabilities. Over time, the game's difficulty increases, spawning more powerful and dangerous creatures. The game supports up to 4 players in online multiplayer. The game received generally positive reviews at release. The game follows a similar approach to the first title, in which 1 to 4 players must progress several levels while killing enemies. Most survivors are locked until the player completes challenges pertaining to each one or purchases the survivors of the Void expansion. The only survivors available at first are the Commando and Huntress. Sorry, I need to cough.
James.
James.
Is it Risk of Rain 2?
That's what I was going to guess.
It is Risk of Rain
2. Damn it.
Well done,
yeah,
James.
Yeah, good.
Really just cementing your lead with that. We really need you to take this holiday so we can all catch up.
It's coming, don't you worry.
You are currently in the lead on 12 points. Shannon bumped up to second, but on 6 points, so only halfway there. It's tough. Anyhow, with that, let's bring an end to what was this week's episode of the Press Start Podcast. Subscribe to us on Listener or the podcast service of your choice. Follow us at pressstart.au and visit the site at pressstart.com.au. We've been joined today by Kieran.
Yeah, you can follow me on X at hashbrown, HASH_BRAUN.
Joining us today and bagging the points, it was James.
Yes, you can get me on X at James8HAMZ.
And last but not least, it was Shannon.
Yes, you can also get me Shannon Quixty on all the things.
Yeah, you can collect.
Get me good.
Come and get me. And I've been your host, Ewan. You can follow me on socials at Ewan_Roxburgh. Thanks again for tuning in. And until next time, happy gaming.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.